This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Scoop. Sam Claiborne,
Scoopers.
Dan Stapleton is here for now.
Hot to the game.
And then in a little bit, we're going to swap Dan out for Casey DeFritas from our guides team, who will
see if you can spot the difference.
Yeah, see if you can spot the difference when it happens. We won't make mention of it.
Watch this space.
We've got a great show for you planned this week. We've got to talk about this brand new Nintendo initiative, the Nintendo Labo Toy Cons that just blew
it's
our minds.
This
scoop.
Is just in. This
is just in. We got a real scoop gem for you. We're going to talk about a new Alien game that is in development. But first, while we have him here, let's talk about Dan's two favorite things. PC games and Final Fantasy.
Well, one out of two I bet.
Final Fantasy 15 coming to PC March 6th. And that's the same day the Royal Edition will also come to consoles, cool. Which is a further expanded version of the original Final Fantasy 15.
You know what they call it in France?
In addition to the base game, and all I already regret. And now it's time for Casey. In addition to the base game and all current Season Pass content, which includes character-specific episodes, Gladiolus, Prompto, and Ignis, as well as the multiplayer Comrades expansion, both editions will feature all updates to the game. It also includes two new areas of the map, a new boat, a new accessory, a first-person mode.
Some of those things aren't as big as the other things.
But it's like all of this, all this together. Like,
what about the
wasn't
game?
In the original game.
I know. What about VR fishing?
I don't think that's included.
But there's fishing. There's non-VR fishing.
I mean, there's just regular fishing.
Yeah, I played the non-VR fishing. It's pretty good.
So this is all out in the PC version, which is the first time PC players will get to play. The Royal Edition, for everyone else, is going to be $20. All the extra stuff is $20 for people who already own the game.
Oh. Any console?
Yeah.
Like to upgrade,
to upgrade your
PC
current
thing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
No, well, some commenters were expressing their frustration that, like, when you buy the game on day one, you don't get the full game.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, that has been definitely the case for that game.
I mean, this
because
is
because they changed chapters in it.
Well, it's 2018. That game is a 2016 game. It's now in its second year of life. And, like, this is coming up on because they've promised they're not even done. Like,
and this is in addition to the season pass stuff.
Yeah. So we're in a second season pass territory now. And, like, this is getting up there with, like, Borderlands 2 for, like, games that, in my opinion, like, single player games that aren't, like, you know, MMO or Division or something like that, that have had the most continued, like, post-launch support in terms of big story patches and just small little things like first-person mode and remixing content and changing things. It were in almost unprecedented territory.
No, I'd say like the Mass Effect games had more, and except for Andromeda, granted. the prior Mass Effect games had a regular infusion of DLC, like story DLC, for a couple of years.
Yeah. But like this one added, like, just a patch would come out and like, hey, you can drive your car off-road now.
Yeah.
And it's like, was anybody asking for that? Like, it's just like, these bizarre, like this bizarre weird mismatch of like story DLC that's filling in gaps in the story. You know, new side quests, new functionality, new areas. Like, it's crazy to me.
It is. It's crazy to me, too. Like, I have Final Fantasy 15, but I don't have all this stuff, and I don't have the Season Pass stuff. So it's like, if I revisit that game in 5-10 years, I don't have the full thing, right? I just have, like, the initial chunk of it. Yeah. It's just different. It's weird.
Yeah,
weird times.
You always run into that I didn't get the full game thing, yeah. Which to me rings as, like, an argument against ongoing development, ongoing support, because you're, like... Okay, which I don't know. I it's like, yes, obviously I want the best quality game.
I can see waiting 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing wrong.
It's a valid question, yeah. It's like, what? Maybe we are getting to a time when there are only a few select games you got to have on day one.
It does become like that choice. Assassin's Creed is another really wonderful example where very meaty, meaningful DLC is coming out now, sort of when that game's moment is kind of past. Like, you don't hear as many people talking about Assassin's Creed Origins. And big DLC that raises the level cap, unlocks new areas of the map, new bosses. And I played 6 or 8 hours of that game in the fall and kind of fell off it. I liked it, but, you know, just fell off. And now it puts you in a little bit of an awkward spot where, like, when is the right time to play a game? Like, last fall was arguably, like, the worst time to play Final Fantasy. Like, you missed the boat on getting to be a part of the conversation. But you also missed the boat on, like, well, you don't get the complete, like, everything. Just give me all the content and let me explore it all at once. Either. So, like, as someone that didn't play through Final Fantasy 15, and I'm very curious about it, I really like the game style and all that.
Is this tantalizing to you?
It is, but there's
chocobos in it.
It's got chocobos. But in the back of my head, I know that there's still more DLC to come. So part of me, like, it has the opposite effect. It has a cooling effect, a chilling effect on my willingness or excitement to play the game. Like,
have
I'd
you
almost
ever waited and played a super edition of a game?
Yeah, that's when, like, if I ever don't play a game at launch, I wait for the super edition.
Like, what's one? I've never actually waited. I always play them at launch.
You're talking about, like, the game of the year edition that includes all this stuff.
Yeah, but, like, it's intriguing to me now that I'm thinking about it more. Like, maybe I should wait. Because they're always cheaper, too. Sometimes it's, like, $40 to get, like, even more stuff.
Oh, like, you get Witcher. And then you get Steam sale, and you get it dirt cheap. Oftentimes, they'll give you the base game for next to nothing so they can sell you the DLC.
I did that with Witcher. Was probably the most recent example.
Mm-hmm. Man, I can't even imagine getting to the DLC starting from scratch in that game. Now you're never going to get through the main game, 200 hours.
Yeah.
And if you're patient and you don't mind playing things after launch, it is the best way to play a game because they've like not only just the content, they've ironed out all the bugs.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff that you can
and all the strategy guides are complete.
That's right. You can go to wikis.
It is true.
And in the case of Final Fantasy in particular, they fixed aggravating things that people didn't like. Like, you could only take one hunt contract at a time. And like 10 months after that game came out, they're like, oh yeah, we fixed that. And it's like, what about the people that played it at launch? Like,
they gave it a worse score.
They're always going to put out the best product they can at launch, but like that there are limits to what they can do. Like, it's like no game is ever like if you talk to any creator of any kind of art, it's like, is that done? It's like, well, no, I just had to move on to something else.
That's totally true.
Right. It's like, is a review done when I post it? It's like, no, I could have made a bunch of
and that's your art.
Stuff. Right.
Just like we're going to do with this conversation.
Yeah, it's like we would have done this conversation way better on take two, but we just have to move on.
The remastered edition of this episode of Game Scoop will be.
You know, people have never heard our first takes of all of these Game Scoops.
That's right. Yeah, that's true.
Like in the archives.
It's true.
First take. It's a crazy different experience.
Yeah, each episode of Game Scoop, we do a couple of rehearsals, and then we do a dress rehearsal the night before.
The previous rehearsals were completely undressed.
Yep, yeah.
undressed rehearsals.
And then finally, the product that you see in here is, you know, we've gone through several iterations before we've arrived here.
Sam didn't have a mustache to get in the pilot.
Yeah, we tried.
We retooled Justin.
It was because Sam had a deal with another podcast he was being on where he had to shave his mustache, so we've digitally added Sam's mustache in post.
This is what it looks like.
Here.
That's why his face looks like that.
This is just normally what I look like.
So stupid. So Final Fantasy 15 is out on PC on March 6th, and the Royal Edition is out on consoles on the same day as well.
I'm going to play it.
All right, Justin. Report back after March 6th.
Get that PC out from behind your couch.
I'm going to push that car.
But Dan already played it. He's such a big fan.
I played the car pushing part. I played the first couple hours.
Yeah. I played probably a couple dozen hours of that game, but then never finished it. I just fell off. And I don't know that I'll ever really go.
Same. I was about 20 or 30 hours in, but I got to the point where they were like we're going to fix this level. Don't play it yet.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay, I'll wait.
Yeah, but it's fall. And
but
I was playing
but now, you've, game. Now you've completely forgotten everything that came before that, so jumping back
in. Well, I remember riding the chocobos, Dan.
Yeah, definitely did that. All right, moving on. We found out today a new Alien game is in development. Fox Next Games. If you haven't heard of from them, they were announced early last year. They are under 20th Century Fox, which
now
also
a Disney subsidiary.
I'm sorry?
Which soon is now, to be a Disney subsidiary. Yeah. I guess the deal isn't closed yet, which is probably why they've announced this game now.
That's probably true.
Why they started working on it.
That's why Aliens and Kingdom Hearts now, too.
Yep.
That's true.
Alien,
the Xenomorph.
Alien ship.
Yeah, the new Xenomorph and Ripley are playable in Kingdom Hearts 3. Of course, 20th Century Fox owns the rights to the Alien franchise, and this new game is going to be set in the Alien cinematic universe, for good or bad.
Including Covenant?
Well, I mean, that's part of the...
That is part of the universe, right?
Universe, yeah. And Prometheus. So Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection... then jumped Prometheus and Covenant.
So no Alien versus Predator.
No. Well, I don't think they. I actually don't know if they.
Nobody knows.
Are in the same cinematic universe. I don't know. I've never seen any of the AVP movies, but I'm sure our listeners will let us know in the comments.
All the continuity is so broken in that. They should just reboot it.
Yeah, it's true. Now here, the developer is Cold Iron Studios, and this apparently is their first game. They were founded in 2015. It includes industry veterans who've worked on various high-profile titles, including Bioshock Infinite, Metroid Prime 3,
amazing,
Neverwinter, and City of Heroes. And it's a shooter.
That's crazy.
It's going to be a shooter for PC and unspecified consoles. So this announcement comes along the news that Fox Next Games has acquired Cold Iron Studios. Cold Iron's founded in 2015. 3 years ago, they've been working on something. Now they're acquired to make this Alien game, which sounds like they were working on something.
I would guess they were already...
Turn it into an Alien game.
Do you think they were making a vertical slice?
I would guess they made a vertical slice of an Alien game.
Okay, and pitched it.
Yes, and then Fox
was
like, hey,
we can just buy it. So let's explain what a vertical slice is.
It's a demo. It's a short playable scene that shows off what they envision a game will look like. Some of you may remember the vertical slice that we saw of Alien Colonial Marines that ended up they didn't hit that target.
They're not great.
They did not hit that target.
But sometimes they're playable for press, and I played the Prey 2 one, and it was like this crazy Blade Runner world that was like explorable and had Borderlands-style missions, and all you play is it's why we call it a vertical slice is that it's not the first hour of the game or anything like that. It's like, okay, imagine what it'd be like 20 hours into the game, and then you get to see, you know, what you'd feel like then. It's a pretty interesting thing to develop.
15 minutes of it. You know, useful from a marketing standpoint, so it can be on stage at an E3 press conference or press can play it, but also as a target for so that everyone on the team understands, this is where we're going.
And it's usually super polished and on a great PC. Yeah. So
not just the team, but when they're selling it to the publisher, it's like, hey, here's what we want to do. Give us feedback on that.
Yeah, so this one is going to be a shooter. If it's described as a shooter, does that tell you it'll be less of a survival game like Alien Isolation was?
Right, Alien Isolation is not considered to be a shooter. It's a survival horror game.
Yeah.
So
we're probably talking about more than one alien. A little more action-packed. No, you don't think so?
Maybe a Predator?
I think...
What are you shooting?
Yeah.
All the whole game.
I feel like the only reason I made that noise is just because traditionally shooting xenomorphs is not gone.
This Aliens vs. Predator, the original game was good.
I'm not talking about video games. I'm just talking about in the fiction of the Alien universe. That's just...
Guns are ineffective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Because we got to nuke them from orbit.
Yeah. You just got to keep some distance in between.
Yeah, get out of the splash zone. Those of you in the first few rows.
Spoilers, they have acid for blood.
But I don't know. I will be very disappointed if this game is not being designed with VR in mind.
VR in mind. Well, Alien Isolation was in VR also, wasn't it?
It was hacked in, with the PC version, with the early version of the Oculus,
You and I played that on the first development of Oculus,
but it was totally broken because it wasn't fully supported.
Environment seemed to work really well.
Yeah, it worked fine, but when we would zoom in and lock onto a control panel to use it, your face would go into it.
That's right.
So it was all but unplayable. At least when we tried it. But yeah, so you can hack it and make that work, and you get a lot of that stuff. But you don't get, you know, very important things for the sense of presence, like the ability to move your hands independently and, you know, freak out when a facehugger jumps on your face. Mm-hmm. Things like the PSVR AIM VR controller, you know, where you're actually holding a gun. It's like that's I think very important to the experience of playing an alien shooter in VR. That we haven't had yet.
If I were to guess, I would say VR is likely, and I would say shooter doesn't necessarily. I mean, I equated it to sort of action game earlier, but it doesn't have to be. Like, I think it'll look and feel more like, you know, a Metroid Prime or a Half-Life or a BioShock, where it's creepy and environmental, and you're exploring an environment. And yeah, maybe the main way you interact with the game is shooting, but I don't envision it being a big twitchy action
like a Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, maybe more like that.
And that would work for VR as well.
Yeah.
If I were designing, I would make it about people who created an alien-proof suit so you wouldn't get acid on you.
Oh.
And then you can shoot whatever you want.
Yeah. It's true.
Like, and this is what we designed, an alien-proof suit. And then it's like...
Is it also second mouth-proof?
And there's a jetpack.
And there's a jetpack. Okay.
There's a jetpack.
You think it's a
second mouth-proof? Yeah. It's like the alien comes up and like hits the glass, and then the mouth goes through, but it hits another pane of glass.
We got you. Yeah. But then there's a third mouth.
Yeah, then you hold up your hand like this, and like the suit protects you.
No one expects the third mouth.
Well, Alien Isolation proved to be a fairly divisive game. Ryan McCaffrey's review for IGN was a little more lukewarm, but I know a lot of people out there really liked the game. It ended up being a little slow for my taste, but I really liked the attention to detail in the world and how they really nailed the world of that first movie.
They had like some 70s tech in it, and it had cool tape recorders.
That's something everyone agrees on. Yeah, even Ryan liked that a lot. Yeah.
So, you know, this is it's an officially licensed Alien game, so hopefully, you know, there will be more cool like world building. Who knows where this is going to fit into the whole Alien timeline now,
such as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I know they had planned to do even more Alien movies leading off from Covenant, but that movie kind of tanked, so
who knows and who cares.
I still will argue that there's only two.
I was just gonna say, yeah, those first only two Alien movies two are really good.
Yep. Alien movies.
I like Prometheus. Sorry.
That's what I think.
I like the two.
I like things about Prometheus, but
yeah, like the werewolf. I like that part. Right?
The werewolf was well. I mean, we don't want to get spoilers. Let's just stop talking about it right there, Sam. Right. Before we spoil anything else. Dan, before we let you go here, we have an email from one of our listeners that is relevant to your expertise.
It's Final Fantasy based.
My favorite kind of.
It's from Scott. All right. Do you know Scott?
I know A. Scott.
He emailed us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can.
Camp Goose.
And he says, I was curious on your thoughts on a realization I had. What do you think?
That's an outstanding realization.
All right, please leave, Dan. Take this seriously or leave.
And I'm out.
Scott says, I was watching a review from Mario Odyssey, where the reviewer criticized numerous aspects of the game, citing typical items like motion controls and a lack of truly complex platforming. However, all I could think of is, this is a kid's game. Motion controls are easy for kids, and I truly thought there was sufficient level design for that audience. My question is a little tough to word. Is it fair to critique a Mario game at the same one would critique Dark Souls? Many of us love Mario 64, which is inherently a kid's game most of us played as a kid. Or when you're in college. Adults are reviewing the game, but are not the target audience. And doesn't that creep into a review? So he's asking about how do adults review games that are meant for kids. Although I would argue that Mario Odyssey is not solely meant for kids. It's a game for everybody.
I'm on the same page. Like I don't think that saying like, oh, well, kids would be happy with this cardboard box, therefore it is a great game. Is a good way to.
That's a very relevant comparison you just made.
I was not going for that, but okay.
We'll get to a Nintendo announcement.
No, later. Actually, I was deliberately doing that. Definitely.
Oh yeah.
So like kids are. I have a 2.5-year-old. He's very easily pleased by pretty much anything. That doesn't necessarily make it a high quality thing. I think that also when I was a kid, I played the original Super Mario Brothers when I was like 6 or 7 years old, and you know, had fun with it then. I have fun with that game now. I think it is a very well designed game, even as an adult. I think that introducing a kid to a well designed game, they may not know enough to appreciate it then because they haven't had experience with a bunch of games. They don't know the difference between a good game and a bad game for the most part. But I plan to introduce my son to good games when possible, but you know, if he wants to play some junk, fine. But I'm still not going to say that junk is a good game.
So, but what about I guess what Scott maybe is getting at, or maybe I'm just personally curious to know your opinion on, is whether you factor in authorial intent, like Roger Ebert.
Oh, the author is dead.
Well, but like this is he would say like this is a stupid comedy. It's very dumb, but it's trying to be very dumb, and it does being very dumb very well. You know, 4 stars. Whereas maybe like Schindler's List or something gets 3.5 stars, and then it's like, well, because its intent was completely different. It's like it's not actually saying Dumb and Dumber is a better movie, but it succeeded at what it was trying to do.
I think it's less about, for me anyway, it's less about what a movie or game or whatever is trying to do and how much I appreciate what it does. Mm. Whether it does that deliberately or accidentally, you know, more often than not, it's deliberate, but sometimes, you know, I sat through a bunch of college literature classes where more people, you know, dug intent out of an author's work that I'm pretty sure it was not intended by those authors. So it's just, they call that death of the author, where what the author said is not necessarily important to what you take out of it.
Hmm. Yeah, it happens with the Constitution all the time, too. So two things to consider when we write a review are our voice and then our audience. And that really factors into this, too, right? We to take the audience side, we know who we're writing for. And we don't always consider parents as being our primary audience, but sometimes we might want to specify that in a review. But again, like we are thinking of our voice and our audience being one and the same, which is we are trying to speak to somebody at a bar, or somebody on your couch, you know, that's just a good friend, and like kind of that's our voice, and it's also our intended audience, somebody we would like to explain how much we liked a game too. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, I guess the only reason I circle back to intent was Scott mentioned that some reviews criticized Mario Odyssey for a lack of truly complex platforming, and I would say, well, it wasn't their intent to use this game to introduce truly complex platforming. Their intent was to have a world full of discovery, and, you know, there's a secret around every corner, and, you know, be a little bit more puzzly than other Mario games, you know? So it's
That's really up to the reviewer's own standards, whether what they consider to be valuable in a game, you know, somebody might not like complex platforming, and that's fine. And their review would say, you know, it doesn't have complex platforming, but that's fine. I prefer this exploration and discovery. Somebody else's
Freud says complex platforming is a sign of.
But someone else who really values the mechanical side of it would say, well, I didn't like this game very much because it doesn't have the complex platforming, even though it does have this other stuff, this exploration that I did enjoy, but not as much.
But then you're bringing your personal, and I do agree with you, I'm just enjoying sort of getting your take on this, but that's like bringing, to use an extreme example, you might say, well, I really like shooting, and there's no shooting in this, and so I don't like it, where, again, that's a very extreme example. That's much more of a stretch than expecting complex platforming from a Mario game, but you're still bringing your own expectation to the table instead of just judging the product that's in front of you.
Absolutely, but I mean that's why we typically go for people who appreciate a given genre. Like if you put me in front of a Final Fantasy game, for example, my review might not be very favorable because I'm not that into that style of game. But it's still my honest.
You just don't like
the
hair. It's the style of hair.
Yeah. It's just my personal standpoint on that style of game is not generally great, but it's still my honest opinion of what I think about it, and I can specify what I did and did not like about it. But that's why we try and get somebody who would be into that style of game, even if that individual game was not their cup of tea.
Sure.
So kids don't know what's good. Like they might like something and not realize it's cliched or derivative.
Have you seen what kids put in their mouths? They have no idea what's good.
Yeah, yeah. But if an adult is reviewing a kid's game, you don't think it's their job to approach it from a standpoint of, will kids enjoy this?
I mean, for one thing, it's very hard to guess what kids will enjoy. Yeah. If you've ever tried to buy a toy for a child and they again prefer the box to the toy,
just like cats.
Yeah, yeah. like it's very hard to predict. Oftentimes, is it colorful and makes funny noises? Kids will like it, sure. Yeah. But that doesn't. Am I going to say this is a good game because it's colorful and it has a lot of noises? No, I'll say it has colorful and it has funny noises, and the actual game part of it is bad.
Yeah. You can just report back on how much you personally enjoyed it, right?
Right. Or if it's something that's meant to be played with a kid, you play it with a kid and you know, talk about
it. We have done that in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we have enlisted the help of some younger gamers with reviews. It's an interesting question. Thank you for your insight, Dan.
Uh-huh.
Now we are going to say goodbye to Dan. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking a lot about, what is it, the Nintendo Labo and a couple other Nintendo Switch questions. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, everybody. Now we're joined by Casey DeFritas from our guides team. I think this is Casey's first appearance on GameSweep. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your favorite game of all time?
Zelda Monster Hunter?
Zelda Monster Hunter. Mm.
That is now a game.
I wish that were a game.
Pokemon. Three.
Pokemon Monster Hunter. What have you been playing recently?
That would be a good game.
I mean, yeah.
It would be amazing.
Be a lot of collecting, though. You got 900 Koroks, like 700 Pokemon.
Yeah.
How many monsters?
Yeah. Like 100 monsters to destroy, hundreds of armor sets to make so you can go catch better Pokemon.
Yeah.
But all you do like the in-depth collect-y games.
Yeah, I do. I like them a lot. Yeah.
That's my favorite genre of game.
Good for guide writing.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Now, what have you been playing recently?
I've been playing Monster Hunter World.
There you go.
To write wikis and write strategy guides, and it's been a good time.
That's good. That's good to hear. I'm really
excited.
There's
a beta on Friday.
And you play the other betas too, so
yes.
You can talk about those. You just can't talk about the full game. And you're liking it so far, right?
Yes, I've liked all the betas. I've liked the preview build I played. It's been great. If you haven't played Monster Hunter before, this is a very good time to start.
And there's plenty of people playing in the office for the first time.
Yeah, so many people, and it gets me so excited. Yeah. Everyone's coming up to me and it's like, hey, Casey, so how do you like Monster Hunter? It's like, you're interested? You're going to play?
Yeah, for sure.
And the people that are already playing are like, Casey, what the heck does this mean?
Yeah.
You're getting real-time game help.
That's why,
which is super useful, and I'm really looking forward to that.
That's why people who haven't played Monster Hunter before, when they play this game on January 26th, Casey's Guide will be available to help.
Just Google Casey's Guide.
Yep.
Casey's Monster Hunter.
That might work.
I'll have to optimize
this
for that.
That may work.
Okay, let's talk about this whole new Nintendo thing that was just announced today, Nintendo Labo. Is that what it's, the full name, the actual name, what it's called?
Yeah, and then also, what's the package?
Toy-Cons.
Toy-Cons. Which I love.
Are the packages.
I love Toy-Cons. Oh, mm-hmm. That's pretty cute.
Labo is okay.
Yeah.
Toy-Con
so like
is really
Amiibo,
cool.
But with Lab.
Yeah, okay, that makes more sense then,
And it's like, there's a whole, Justin, you probably know about this, there's a whole genre of kids makerspace style games, like maker games, right? So it's like, you're giving your kid like an electrical set to build. And these were around when we were kids, but they're hot. They're really hot.
Right? I had an electric potato.
STEM,
a potato
or
clock.
Or STEAM. There's the popular
Science,
words
technology, engineering,
kids.
And math.
Yeah.
So that's what Nintendo is getting into with this. It's like it's a kit building system that works with Switch.
Do it yourself.
No, they do. I wasn't joking about STEM and STEAM, by the way. Like it's become like it's again as you may know, I am a father. And every toy is like STEM friendly, good for STEM skills. I'm like, it's just blocks, man. You can't assign that.
That's basically engineering.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, just more complicated blocks. All right, so let's try it. It's hard to describe what this is, actually. There is a trailer, it's out there right now, that you can check out, Nintendo Labo, but it's basically is it Toys of Life? It's a Toys of Life sort of thing.
It's cardboard.
It's complementary to the Nintendo Switch. So you're
really
going to need
the controllers and the screen separately.
Yeah.
Let's start with that. Like you get physical sheets of cardboard that then you punch out and fold things together and make contraptions that you can plug your Switch and Joy-Con into to do different functions, right?
Yeah. So some of the examples were they built a piano, a playable piano that your Switch screen sits in, and you build yourself the keyboard. You can play piano on it. And the way that works is...
So the Joy-Con controllers are you see them go in the sides, right? And then there's a display on the top, which is your Switch screen. And each mechanical piano that you fold out of cardboard piano key has a little strip of reflective tape that gets vaulted up when you hit the key, right? And then it's seen by an infrared camera, which is on the Joy-Con itself.
So clever.
So the Joy-Con is looking to see when these silver keys pop up. Yeah. And I guess probably that's the distance or some kind of...
Color, maybe. I guess
some kind of patterning tells it which key is up.
Yeah.
And you can not only do like keys, you can like adjust the tone.
That's crazy.
With dials.
How long do you think it took Nintendo to figure this out? And how long did they play test it?
Yeah.
Some of this stuff is complicated. If you look at the robot.
The mechanical design.
Yeah.
You make a robot.
Yeah, you can make a robot backpack and everything is connected. You can put a Joy-Con on your foot, I think.
Yeah.
So it can read where you're standing. It has one in a headpiece. Mm-hmm. And then you also have one in your hand. And then they're attached to cables that go into a backpack.
I love that.
The cabling is really, we don't know, by the way, this just happened shortly before the game.
Yeah, just now.
So maybe we'll know more by the time this airs, you know, because there's a little delay from recording to go up. But I have a lot of questions about the strings. You see strings and cabling coming out of some of these contraptions, and it's like, well, what's that tugging on? What's going on? How does this thing actually work?
Yeah, another one was like a fishing rod that you build for some sort of fishing game. Mm-hmm. Were there any other examples?
My favorite ones is the RC cars.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's not really cars. They're like little walkers, and they're based on the tech that you see when you're like in the airport or a mall where you see something vibrating so fast that it's moving around.
Yeah.
There's like all these, like, this is like kind of a way to move things with that. And the Joy-Cons have like several different motors in them.
HD Rumble.
HD Rumble.
There you go.
And it allows you to, I guess, stick it in this cardboard bug, and it can, you know, basically figure out by your directions where to rumble right for it to move.
That's actually the one out of the five or however many contraptions we saw, the one that has an analog to me, just as a father of a little kid, like a little DIY thing that's pretty common to do at home, is attach like a buzzer or something that has a little motor on top of a hairbrush. And then it's like, that's just a fun activity to do with kids. And then it buzzes and it
moves around.
Yeah, it'll flop all over your like kitchen floor.
Really?
Yeah.
Hours of entertainment.
That makes sense then. I was just thinking, well, we should talk about pricing on this. But you could make your own patterns, right? You could cut out your own. Once you know what the kid is, you don't have to buy their package because it is, in the end, just cardboard and these metals.
Except for maybe the IR sensors.
Yeah, some of the stuff is complicated. The cars and the little man that you saw attached to the Joy-Con, maybe not so much.
That flops over.
Yeah, that flops over. And there was some touchscreen mechanism going on to control that. I'm not really sure what kind of game that will be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the backpack, the piano look pretty complicated.
They look complicated. I know people are going to want to DIY these, maybe even make them out of plastic so they last forever. You know, but like you need the Switch to make this all happen. So just like games, you need, this is to get Switches in your house.
Yeah.
You know, and like everything around it, Nintendo could just put out paper kits and kids to play with them. But like this is about using the Switch, and it's
like
interesting.
Copy protecting cardboard patterns. Like, like, can you do that? Like, that's going to be pretty tricky.
Yeah, so Nintendo Labo, the pricing information we have so far is that there's a $70 pack that comes with five kits. Is that correct? Is that interesting?
I believe so. The piano, the RC cars, the man, the fishing pole, and then I'm missing one.
One other one. And then there's an $80 pack that includes what else?
Just the robot.
That's like just a big robot.
Backpack.
Yeah, it's like a backpack. Okay. But it's it's very large. There's like a head and apparatus. You're holding things. You're strapping stuff to your feet. And there's a bunch of stuff going on in the backpack.
What does the house do?
Oh, yeah, the house. That was the fifth thing in the variety kit.
You can decorate.
You can make it look pretty. I have no idea what the house does.
It's like it has a Switch controller inside the side of a Joy-Con inside. It's like, what's that doing in there?
I mean, kids play house, though.
Yeah,
so that's true.
It doesn't need to be like, maybe the sophistication with the Switch isn't incredibly complex, but, you know, just sound effects.
What if that's Animal Crossing?
And you need the house.
Or like Amiibo functionality, like your little Amiibo live in the house.
Yeah, maybe your Amiibo live in the house.
So what is the Toy-Con part of it?
I think those are the kits, the cardboard kits.
Okay, the individual kits. Okay, the overall initiative is Labo.
So Labo might outlast Joy-Cons, in which it will be Labo series something else cons or something else toy.
Oh, but the Joy-Con read them and interact with them.
No, I'm just saying, like, I think they want to brand this for a long time.
Sure, yeah.
Like Amiibo.
Yeah, you're right.
So there has to be some sort of software that goes along with this. Does it come with like a cartridge, or is there a separate game that you have to buy? Yeah. Does anybody know? We don't know how this works yet.
Mm-mm. It's interesting because, you know, Nintendo, like my Switch is digital only just because it's a console you take on. Oh, didn't want to mess with carts. Mm-hmm. So that's a decision that I made. But if millions of people are still buying games. So yeah, I mean, does it have to come with a cart, or, you know, you'll have the option of getting it from the eShop?
Well, no, by the time you hear this episode.
Yeah, probably.
So, sorry.
I'm thinking it'll be something that you download because, for example, the 3DS had those AR card apparatus, and that was just built into it. That wasn't a separate thing that you needed to do because they're such small games.
That's going
to
force people
to
download.
The little cards. I mean, if it can be in a cereal box, it could
force them to go online.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
The whole Labo thing is not that far off. It's out April 20th, so in just a few months. Yes, and it's the timing of the announcement is so strange to me. It's less than a week since their last Nintendo Direct. Mm-hmm. We just had CES, where lots of new technology gadgets are announced. They didn't choose to announce it there, so I don't know. It's I guess they are trying to separate this out from
separating
their, like,
it from the direct is interesting.
Yeah.
But it'll be all over E3 probably, which will be interesting.
It'll already be out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, just like new sets and stuff. And they'll probably have it out on the floor.
And they're actually doing Nintendo Labo Studios in New York City and San Francisco. So if you have a kid between the ages of 6 and 12, you can sign up to go early. And in New York City, they're doing it February 2nd to 3rd.
Oh, cool.
And in San Francisco, it's March 2nd through 4th. So if you go to labo.nintendo.com, you can sign up and see if you get in. But you also have to have a child to do it. So,
hey, kid, you want to go see some Labo?
All right. So all this discussed, what do we think? This seems cool. I know Sam seemed you were excited about it.
I'm excited, but I also think the pricing is stupid and it's very Lego-like.
Yeah.
Where it's like they want you to get a premium big price. Expensive box for cardboard. It's a little bit silly, but it's also designed. But I think it'd be cool if this got to the point, like also Lego, where when you're in the impulse item part of Target, you just pull a $5 foldable toy off and it has some kind of Nintendo component to it.
Yeah.
That's what I think it needs to get to.
Some little papercraft dog that does something with your Switch and it doesn't have to be a big deal.
And the reason I say this is because the Switch is a huge investment for parents already.
Already, yeah.
So it's like, throw them some cheap cardboard.
And how easy is it to break cardboard?
Yeah.
That's one foul step and it's done.
Yeah.
You know what,
you have to go buy a whole new pack.
Pets will like it a lot.
Oh, no. My cat. Yeah,
cats.
My cat would just completely
cardboard.
Destroy the
cardboard. Just ate through cardboard boxes.
Yeah, that's true. Man, my cat totally eats cardboard. Yeah.
That robot backpack is like my cat's like favorite place to hang out. It's exactly like that. A cardboard box, you know, that big.
And I have very real concerns about the build quality of, and to be fair, not
the build quality of the cardboard.
Well, but I was going to say, like, not all cardboard is created equally. Like, there's grades of cardboard. So it's like, but
this
even
looks
so.
Like good thick cardboard, too.
This could go either way, right? Like, either it's going to be really feel magical and really special and open up this world of possibility, or it's going to be you're selling us really expensive cardboard and we're all mad. Like, the devil's going to be in the details on it. So I'm very skeptical, but I will say, just big picture, we spend so much time week after week on GameScoop talking about, you know, 4K TVs and 120 hertz displays, and like Nintendo continues for decade after decade to just like, you're all going over here. I'm gonna go way over here.
Just flip the table.
Like nobody else is even close to thinking about or doing about anything like this. Yeah. Like so whether it works or not, or whether it's a flop or not, like, all credit to them, man, for like being just staying weird
and making our jobs interesting.
Yeah.
Keep Nintendo weird.
Keep Nintendo weird.
Speculation has been incredibly high since the beginning of January. Everyone having rumors about Nintendo Direct. And no one expected anything like this.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, totally at
true.
All. Like, nothing close. So thanks, Nintendo. Good job for surprising everyone.
We were all thinking peripheral. And that meant to everybody in our office when we were speculating. Yeah, something that connected that way or it slid right into the slots.
Yeah.
But this is like taking it all apart and putting it in peripheral.
Well, they probably, it's easy to imagine, you know, that was the Switch speculation from the beginning, was those slots, like anything can connect there. It doesn't have to be Joy-Con sliding into the slots. And that was probably Nintendo's thought process as well. And they brainstormed a million different things sliding into those slots. And they're like, but to make a big piece of plastic that you sell for $40 or $50, they have to say, do 5 million people want to buy one of these? Like, but Labo is like, that's probably what this was born out of. Is like they have a bunch of ideas that are like kind of cool, but there's not like one balance board size, like just massive peripheral idea.
Yeah.
So this lets them kind of get away with having it both ways.
Yeah. And they have such factory supply problems with these NES classics. Now you're the factory. You put
that's
it together.
True. Yeah. Build your own SNES classic? Yeah, for sure.
The Switch is already a very innovative, different, fresh feeling product, right? And so Nintendo could have just sat back and rode that wave to many tens of millions of more consoles sold, and to see them take a risk for the second year in a row and just sort of try to press their advantage in terms of innovation is really interesting to me.
It's also interesting that this news comes in the same week that Nintendo reaffirms its lack of interest in VR or 4K support. This comes out of an interview with the head of Nintendo France this week, where he said he doubts that VR can appeal to the mainstream. He questions how useful investing in 4K technology would be, given it is currently embraced by a relative minority of users. He also questions how much novelty Nintendo could bring to 4K support compared to its competitors, where Microsoft and Sony, Nintendo is a smaller company than both of those companies. He says it would be difficult for Nintendo to directly compete in the same way in the terms of 4K VR gaming. So it's interesting that now Nintendo sort of demonstrates what they're thinking of
yeah.
as a way to supplement their new console, right?
Well, Reggie said he doesn't think VR games are fun a lot of the times. They're not intrinsically fun. This, in Nintendo's, I don't think he's played super hot for VR, but this looks like fun for Nintendo. This is something that a kid could look at and say, this is a fun thing that I want to do, that I want to spend time with.
Yeah.
That's a really smart take, because it's true, when you play VR games, they're like immersive. Sometimes they're scary. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're like impressive. And then they're like all these experiences, but the game side of it is usually like kind of a back, it takes a back seat to like the experience, right? And so if Nintendo is really focused on like fun and play, that's just not their bag. The 4K thing, I mean, they've been doing that for this entire generation. Ever since CRT televisions, they're like, we're just going to stick back with the people that have the most of the TVs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worked for them.
They just want it to be accessible to everyone. Yeah. They want all the families, everyone to be able to play Nintendo and not have to invest in a bunch of hardware.
I mean, I love my Switch and I love Nintendo, but cynically, it's in their best interest to like downplay 4K, right? Because they don't support it, their competitors do. So it's very much in their interest to say, oh, those TVs aren't a big deal. Don't pay too much attention to that. So,
and we know that 4K has made development so much more expensive for a small group of people that early adopted it. And like they're missing out on that right now, and they can invest in all these other things. And I don't know, like they're just playing a different game. It's interesting.
Yeah. They do come back to this idea. Well, they used to be a toy company, right? Before they were a video game company. Yeah. But you know, in their more recent modern history, they come back to this idea every once in a while of merging toys with video games. They had the cards you could swipe, even back for the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, the e-reader.
E-reader.
The e-reader, and then obviously Amiibo has been a big success for them. So as a company, I think. You know, I don't know what Nintendo's going to be doing in 15 or 20 years, but I bet you it'll be some mixture of digital and physical. I think that's sort of where they're moving farther and farther in that direction, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can really recommend to go to that site. I think it's called Before Mario, which has just lists and lists of what Nintendo made before and pictures of what Nintendo made before they made video games. And they're so cool. And all these things were designed by people like Gunpei Yokoi, who designed the Game Boy and designed Metroid and Kid Icarus. Really early on, like the 60s, that actually have hints of those things in them. Like there's a Duck Hunt, basically cork shooting set, for instance, from the mid-70s. Or there's a series of dolls that look exactly like Animal Crossing. They have like the little cutout like triangle noses, and there's like little leaves all over the packaging. And like all these things come back around at Nintendo. They're like this really long-term company about play.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's called Before Mario. It's a really well-run blog. Just cataloging all
this
stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. That's a scoop, Jim, ladies and gentlemen. Nintendo Labo, it's out April 20th. But as Casey was saying, there's previews being held in New York and San Francisco next month. So you can expect more impressions.
Are you going to get into those?
In news.
Anyone have a child 6 to 12? Because I don't.
I can find one.
Well, we can rent. I'm sure we can rent one.
Just rent a child.
We can just ask CJ.
I don't know what that website is.
Yeah.
CJ has one. All right.
No. Thanks, CJ.
CJ has one.
For his parents. Seven people.
We're a modern family. We have one more Switch question from one of our listeners before we get to Video Game 20 questions. This is Colby from Maryland, and he says, I've heard quite a few people talk about the Switch in comparison to the Wii U gamepad or a PlayStation Vita and PSTV. Why hasn't there been much, if any, talk about the Super Game Boy and gaming at home, plus on the go as a comparison? Was it not well received when it came out? Also, do you folks have any knowledge of a prior set of devices that accomplished the handheld / home crossover? I looked around. It is very difficult to find sales numbers for the Super Nintendo or for the Super Game Boy. So I'm sorry.
That makes sense.
I had one, but I guess I didn't know a lot of people that had one.
Didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
Until
you
mentioned it.
Have you seen what it looks like?
Yeah, I've seen one. I knew Nintendo 64 had one for Pokemon.
Yeah.
And the GameCube had a Game Boy cartridge player.
Game Boy player.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does the same thing.
Yeah. So, but I didn't know that Super Nintendo had one.
Yeah, the Super Nintendo had a little cart that would let you slot Game Boy cartridges into it.
Yep, and it added color elements to it, so it looked a little bit better. And then it came out, you know, and there was no way to update it ever, but it came out with data in it. So if you put in certain games, it would put a little border around it, mm-hmm. like leaves for the Donkey Kong.
Yeah, like an arcade cabinet.
Certain games could do a little bit more sophisticated color, right? Am I making that up?
Yeah, no.
They could do Game Boy Color level color.
Well, because some games could do, you know, it was just like, hey, instead of monochromatic green, do you want red or yellow? Like, it was kind of lame.
You could switch the palettes.
Yeah, but then later games are like Super Game Boy optimized. Yeah, they did. It's crazy. It was kind of a little bit Switch-like.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a good point. I mean, I think that was the mid-90s when the Super Game Boy was out, and that totally turned your Game Boy into both a handheld and a TV console game. So that was pretty cool.
And it allowed, I read that it allowed people to play multiplayer on games that otherwise you would have to use link cables with.
Yeah, it made it much easier to play multiplayer mm-hmm. games, yeah.
Because you could just use the two controllers, yeah.
And also use a multi-tap and actually get four players going at the same time on the same system.
For an epic faceball session.
Yeah.
Eight players.
If you were, I mean, the Game Boy batteries lasted a very, very long time because that's always been a priority for Nintendo. But when you were a kid, like, it would be real life sometimes that it's like Saturday morning, your batteries run out in your Game Boy, and then there's no more in the house, and then it's a tragedy. Like, you're just hosed. Like, it's one of those things that, like, is just lost to the mist of time. No one has to worry about it anymore.
I mean, I worry about that with my Wiimotes whenever I want to play Smash.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's been 3 months. All of my batteries are dead. I guess I can't turn on
my Wii.
How
does that happen?
Like, the Wii can't turn on unless you have a Wiimote that works.
Yeah.
Even if you're not playing a Wii game that requires a Wiimote.
I think in the case of the Wii specifically, the Wii specifically, my controllers, I mean, my Wii's long been in the closet, but I would like jostle my entertainment center and the controller's like, hey, okay, I'm awake. I'm ready to go. Like it was waking itself up constantly and then draining.
Yeah.
To bring that point back around, the Super Game Boy let you play, like then it just wasn't a concern anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
yeah.
It was, I always had battery anxiety with my handhelds as a kid.
Yeah. Well, Justin, you may be happy to hear that the Ultra Game Boy, which was just revealed at CES last week, has like an internal rechargeable battery. Yeah, this is the Hyperkin one.
And if you want to play Game Boy games in a really nice way, the Retron 5 actually has a slot for Game Boy and Game Boy Color.
Okay.
And it looks amazing. It's just HDMI cable into your television.
Yeah.
It looks great. That's like basically a contemporary Super Game Boy.
It's pretty cool.
It's also an adapter for other systems that are the same way. I won't go too far into it.
Well, so that's for
Could, a, it's a threat.
It's for another podcast. Yeah. All right, and that brings us to video game 20 questions. Casey, do you know how this works?
I think so.
Do you know how 20 questions works?
Yes.
It's so just that with a video game.
All right.
And our question this week comes from Mark. So let the questioning begin.
Mm. Okay. Does your character wear a hat?
I think you can.
I really need to look this one up.
Yeah, so what? I think you can. Like you, I don't think you have to.
You can.
I don't think you're always wearing a hat, but I think it's an option. I think it's an option.
Hat optional.
Yeah.
Okay. Usually it's a yes or no answer. So that was a weird start.
Yeah.
Did this come out before the year 2000?
No.
Was this available on a Nintendo console?
Yes.
Cool.
Okay. Unlikely to have been an exclusive. Was it? You think it's worth narrowing that?
It's worth narrowing.
Okay, was it exclusive to a Nintendo console?
No.
Was this on a handheld?
No. No. Well. Whoa. Hold on. Yes.
Did you just put your hand up again, though?
No, I took it back and then I put it back.
Okay.
Is it on the Switch?
Yes. Okay. That was the.
That was really great.
I can't believe you just made that jump.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, oh, he didn't realize it had a 3DS version, too.
Yeah, nope.
Okay.
But wait, I want to rewind. So it's a Switch game, but that's not exclusive to the. I feel like this is probably, it's probably Super Meat Boy or something like that is recently contemporarily brought to the Switch. Okay, I mean, is this a game that made its debut? The game came out mm-hmm. from the time the Switch launched. Or
I think it's pretty clearly been ported to Switch recently by His Body Language.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well.
I bet it came out like 10 years ago.
I mean, is this a game that's a little bit older that got a port for the Switch?
Define a little bit older.
In between, older than
March 20.
Yeah, older than March 2016. That's when the Switch came out.
No, it's not. It came out March 2017.
That's what I meant.
Okay. You're asking if this game was originally released before the Switch was released?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes or no answers, Damon. Yeah. So much sass today.
That was a long walk, but we got the point.
So, okay. So you can wear hats.
You don't have to wear hats.
Is this? No. Yeah, that's true. Does this have 3D graphics?
No.
It's not Doom.
Yeah, I was thinking that's what
Wolfenstein
I was
or Doom or something. I mean, not Wolfenstein, but Doom. Yeah.
Is it an indie game?
Yes, it is an indie game.
Could be Stardew Valley. Could be,
I have a fedora. The other one I said
could be Meat Boy.
What hat do you wear in Meat Boy?
I don't know, man. It's probably one of the characters you can play.
Meat Hat.
Plays like Bandage Girl.
Did we ask if this is an indie game?
Yeah. Casey just asked.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Do you farm in this game?
Yes.
It's
10.
Can you find a coconut in this game?
I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Dustin?
I played,
I find it? I really need one.
I was going to say, I played like 80 hours of that game, and I'm not positive.
I think you have to go to this new area.
Are there coconuts in that game?
Yes, there are, and I need one.
Oh,
I need a coconut.
You need to go to the desert, probably.
Yeah.
Coconuts
fix that bus. This is Stardew Valley.
It is Stardew Valley.
Nice.
Well done. There you go. Yeah, the handout question threw me for a loop, but yeah.
Yeah.
Can we agree that if it's on the Switch and you ask, is it a handheld game? I should say yes.
That's a tricky question.
Yeah, I think.
Oh man,
I think yes.
All right,
you can hold it in your hands and play.
Literally
it.
Yes, but I just don't want people
thinking.
You
can say yes, but you have to give a little smile.
I think
a wink.
I think the device has a screen. Like, come on, it's handheld.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
that's a good one. You guys got there. Thank you for the suggestion. Mark, if our listeners out there have their own suggestions for video game 20 questions, email them to gamescoop@ign.com. And that is our show for you this week. Did everybody have a good time?
Yeah.
I had a good time.
It was a scoop gem.
It was a scoop gem.
Is there lots of cute boys and girls you can date and eventually marry and start a family with?
I don't know, but...
You're going to start playing.
I am going to start playing.
Oh, dude, Damon, I'm so excited for you.
It's time. It's time.
It's so great. It's just the best.
Yeah. Tell me where the coconuts are at.
If I find the coconuts.
I'm sure Miranda can tell you.
Yeah, all right, that's a good point.
Do we not have a guide that will tell you, a coconut guide?
We do. There's a really good official guide for that game,
really
which has like development notes and stuff in it. But I don't want to use it. I want to do my own stuff for a while.
Yeah. No, I understand. All right, that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Casey. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop. And we're out. We'll be right back.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.